Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the talking show on Kaecheng Radio, Chinatown's best, let's be honest, micro broadcasting radio station. This is the talking show. I'm one of your hosts, Steve Cato, and I am here with guess who?
Nicholas Miller.
My habitual co-host of the last decade.
I gotta clear something up. We're not here together.
No.
It's, you know, there's the COVID-19 pandemic lockdown version 3. And also we can't legitimately say that it's the best micro broadcasting station because we've been effectively locked out of Chinatown for a whole year. And we don't know, since micro broadcasting stations don't broadcast very far, we have no idea what has popped up.
That's the kind of Adam Curtis style doubt that we do not need in this situation. I have a firm belief that this is the best micro broadcasting radio station in Chinatown. Whether we're there or not, I take it on faith, but I also have plenty of experience that indicates to me that it's, like, if not the best, then at least pretty good. And
what if Adam Curtis has popped up his own micro broadcasting station in Chinatown, funded by Skrillex and the BBC and Brian Eno?
Did you watch the new Adam Curtis documentary?
No, I watched the parody you sent me. That was enough. Uh-huh. What is the new one about?
Honestly, it was totally incoherent. It's like, it was a bit very disappointing. It's like, you know, I'm a fan. I like that Adam Curtis is like a guy who just talks more or less and shows you weird footage from history. But he's reached this point where in lots of ways things are repetitive, or the formula is starting to show a lot of, you can sort of see how the thinking works. Like, he finds these people who are perfect Adam Curtis subjects to put in Adam Curtis, get footage of, to put in Adam Curtis movies, you know? And you're like, okay, you found another weird person.
Yeah, like, here's a nun that made mescaline or something.
Right, and is essential to, like, the history of death squads in
Cambodia. You know,
in Cambodia, yeah, and is, like, intimately connected somehow to the foundation of the Khmer Rouge.
Yeah.
Right, you know, and like,
he's a great antidote to Ken Burns, you know, who cast a long shadow on my childhood.
As a Canadian, never heard of the guy until there was a iMovie effect you could employ called the Ken Burns effect.
Yeah.
And I was like, Ken Burns, I wonder who that is. And I was like, he made a documentary about baseball. And I was like, that sounds so boring. It's like 20 parts about baseball. And I was like, oh God, America's the worst.
Yeah. I've never seen jazz portrayed as in such a boring manner as Ken Burns' epic documentary on jazz music.
You know, I mean, so I guess in Adam Curtis's favor, you know, when Ken Burns makes a documentary about jazz, and if I said, hey, Nicholas, you watched the new Ken Burns documentary, and you're like, which one? The one about jazz? And then if I said, yeah, you'd be like, what's it about? you'd never have that problem with Ken Burns. And that's indicative of, I think, you know, part of the mental problem,
right,
with that way of working. So it's good that we can't say exactly what the new Adam Curtis documentary is about. No, it's just like, it's vague. And, you know, he made The Century of the Self like 10 years ago, which
that's
is about
a pretty
like
good
advertising
one.
And in the individual, right? Like sort of the creation of the modern individual as the subject of advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And
like the dark effect of psychoanalysis as a field.
Yeah. And it's relatively concise. And he sort of does the same thing here. He's like, there's this creation of the individual. But like, who's making this individual and for what? You know, like, that's not really elaborated on. And then they turn against the creation of the individual, instead start operating on this sort of, you know, it's like very scattered. It doesn't make very much sense. he's like, then the Cultural Revolution, but the Cultural Revolution is not based on anything. And then China is like, it's just capitalism, basically. So why is it different, you know? And they're like, oh, because it's a nation. You're like, so this is about nationalism? But meanwhile, he's
don't
like,
don't forget satellites.
He's like, this person is trans in England in the 70s. And their interactions with their doctor are very parochial and unpleasant. But then they go and have surgery on their own against their doctor's wishes. And the surgery does not go well. And you're like, so am I supposed to imply that this doctor who did not have this person's best interests in heart in heart of the first place did in fact know better, or just that it's like surgery, like anything carries risks, or like, you know? And then this trans person is sad, and you're like, so you introduce a trans person just to have like the trans person be like a melancholy figure? Like, isn't that what all the trans people in media are anyway? Is just like, oh yeah, that trans person, it's sad because society doesn't really you know, have a spot for those people. You know, like, that's kind of it. And I'm like, what was that for? You know, like it's one thing when you're talking about like the Gang of Four and like Mao Zedong and like the Cultural Revolution. You're like, I see what these people have to do with like the contemporary world. You know, like, yes, that is how China was modern China is formed. You know, like an important detail to the lives we lead. But like, oh yeah, one trans person in England is very melancholy and sad. Their gender affirmation surgery didn't really work out, you know? Okay. What for? You know, it's like, there's just tons of things like that where you're like, so this like, guy who's sort of half crook, half, black revolutionary in London, meets an unfortunate end. You know, he did a crime, maybe, or maybe he was set up, but it was a very serious crime. He maybe did murder, and then maybe gets executed in Trinidad, where he did the murder. You know, oops, you know, like,
and that's how China was formed.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it makes no sense. You know, whereas like, the movie of his that I thought was the best was Bitter Lake, the one that was about the Obamas and the Bin Laden. I mean, not the Obama, the Bushes and the Bin Laden.
That would have been a better one.
The Obamas and the Bin Laden.
That's his next project.
Yeah, they're the same family.
Yeah. And both, Shell Oil.
Both Osama Bin Laden and Barack Hussein Obama were born in Kenya. But anyway, speaking of
enough
incoherent,
the documentarian's media sublime. We've got a shining star of our own tonight, if I
understand true.
Correctly.
We have a discourse lord here, someone who has done maybe more to shape the texture of modern technological language, at least in the mainstream mind. Than anyone. We have a thought leader, and this is his job title, a digital prophet.
Wow.
Employed at, get this, tech giant AOL. So if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know,
it tells me that AOL is still around, which is
astonishing.
An Adam Curtis documentary in itself.
We have none other than Australia's greatest export to New York, Shingy.
All right, before the urban migration of people leaving, perhaps what we'll do is talk about some innovation and show some. Are we cool with that? Oh, amen. Humans, hello. Great, let's get on with it. Here's the deal. This is what I'd like to do. Bloody hell, you've got amazing graffiti in your city. Please do not clean it up. It looks amazing. It's phenomenal. Celebrate that culture. That's my first recommendation. The second thing is, I work for AOL. Now, what's fascinating is, so why am I here at a city summit talking to you guys about cities, but I actually want to talk about people? Because what we are is an organization that brings together all of this. It's platforms, it's scale, it's all about data, but the thing I want to talk about today is innovation, which happens to be the tagline for this conference. In the middle of it is humans. So I love bringing brands to people, and people to brands. And I think cities are just like brands. So I want to talk about that as a creative marketer. But to do that, I want to do it in the context of culture and code and creativity, because that's the heart of what you guys are trying to do here. And it's something that I think every city is trying to do as well. I think you'd all agree, this is all about culture, no code. Those of you in the audience, who had one of these as a kid? Amen. Who still uses it? Not one bloody hand. Anybody still roller skate? Hey. But what's interesting about this is that, you know, who would have thought that Apple would come along with the iPod and beat Sony over the Walkman? What a great name that was. I believe this is all code, no culture. Because if Google do great work, no doubt. But if you want to defriend everybody in one day, wear those around your city and see how quickly you're not going to have friends. So that is all culture, all code, no culture. Now, what's fascinating for me is that you need a balance of both. So culture and code is local. And if you think about cultural movements, they are localization. Not every culture can actually be global. And that's why you're here as a mixing pot of people today. And an example of that is this. This is a brand you may not have heard of, which is in Ghana, but it's called P-Cola. Now, that doesn't translate to every country that I know of, so not a lot of us are going to reach for that brand, one would suspect. Code, however, is global. So it's the foundation to build cultural movements. And we all know that because we all participate in them digitally. Disruption is a word I heard a couple of times this morning. I certainly heard it from Amsterdam. This is amazing. If we think about disruption, disruption is not just about technology. No, it's about business. And business and cities are a brand of a business. And if I think about it, forget about innovation, actually. It's about what are you doing for invention. And invention for me is something like this. So I live in New York City. I think this is quite amazing. They celebrate the fact that it's made in New York City. You guys have a lineage across that as well. I mean, AOL acquired a company quite a while ago here in Israel, which is ICQ. And of course, you've got the rock star, which is Waze. These guys were bought by Google a couple of years ago as well. And I know you've got some amazing ones as well. You've got Fiverr that's here. You've got Outbrain. You've got Taboola. But there are a myriad of like 1,500 brands, I believe, as startups. But, you know, this is also disruption. Airbnb. Who stayed at one of these? All good experiences? Yeah, some good, some bad. What about this? Anybody invested in Kickstarter? So here's the deal about both of those. We think about Airbnb. Airbnb, there is no, every single room is different. There is no hotel chain on the planet that can offer you that value proposition. When you think about Kickstarter, it has democratized the ability for us to invest in startups. That's brand new. So that's disruption in its own right. These guys are clearly disrupting the space. I was in France recently at Cannes. I mean, these guys went out and turned cars upside down. They decided to set things on fire. These guys are no joke. But I don't believe you can stop this. If you think about the power of empowering the people in their hands with what GPS can avail them, this is really powerful. That's disruption. But look, understanding human needs is half the job of meeting them. If you think about it, it doesn't matter whether you're trying to target people psychographically, the believers, the strugglers, the strivers, whatever type of person you're trying to accommodate. When it comes to what cities really need to do, it doesn't matter whether you use this or you use the Maslow's rule of hierarchy, which is all about, you know, the human state. Meeting them halfway is half the job. And here's some of it. Technology changes needs. No, it doesn't. Technology changes behaviors, not the need itself. I would say that this is a need. That's 3D Tinder, man. So that's, you know, actually physically meeting with people in a pub. I think that's really cool. When I grew up as a marketeer, there were four things that we said, these are the four rules to understand how to market. That was just simply this, price, promotion, placement, and it was all about product. If you think about it, there are new four Ps, and it's this. It's platform, it's pedigree, it's performance, and it's also about partnership. That's the way to think about bringing brands to people and people to brands. Now, if you're wondering about my accent, that's the country I'm from. We probably don't have an ambassador from Australia here today, so I'll take it on. That's the country I'm from. Not British, not South African, not New Zealand. What's also interesting is that's the town I'm from. I'm from a tiny town in the middle of nowhere. And that's the house I grew up in as a kid. That's my family. I'm one of 10 children. That's me on the far left. That's 12 people in a two-bedroom house. You want to talk about, Ron was talking about smaller apartments for people. Dude, you cannot get any smaller than 12 people, two-bedroom house. So that's what I grew up in as a kid. And it wasn't until I was 17 that I felt freedom, independence, and self-expression. When I bought my first car. Now, kids are born connected. I don't have children, but 37% of children under the age of 2 can operate your swiping devices. And when you give them analog, this is what happens. They just think stuff's busted, man. I could watch this all day. Isn't it awesome? Kids, man. Amazing, right? But here's what's fascinating. There are two things that bothers me about our current situation. Now, because I don't have kids, I get to see a lot of parenting. And this is what happens. You're in a restaurant. Ah, the kid starts freaking. What do they do? Stick a pad. Give them a tablet. And they're like, oh, the kid shut up. Thank God. But here's what's interesting, right? Kids are losing their perspective. They're not looking up and looking out amongst the world. That's one challenge I have with this generation that's coming amongst us. And then this thing, patience. Because they can't get to the next level in a game, they're like, screw that, I'll go to another game. So patience and perspective is two things that I sort of keep me up at night. So hopefully it will too for you. ADHD is a condition that we have now identified as a disorder. But I think we should redefine that as this. Always distracted hyperdoer. Because that's what we're doing. People are constantly, look at you lot, you're constantly on your devices right now. But look at what's happening. We've got extremes. This is an extreme selfie. This is the world of the always distracted. So we're no longer just doing selfies, man. We've got people climbing on top of very large buildings and falling off of them just to get selfification. What sort of gratification is that? I don't know. But this me generation, I thought this younger generation were really selfish. It's turned out that they're not. They're really, really about sort of community. And they're a we generation. Because as much as we try and amass a digital footprint online, because we think it's popularity, what's happening with the younger generations, they're closing theirs down, like a neighborhood, like a village. And why they're doing that is because they have deep, intimate relationships inside those environments that are far more authentic than this popularity contest that we treat ourselves as. And what's interesting from my perspective is that, you know, social's a great place, but it's always about love that rules over hate. So when social's for good, that's the power of this younger generation. That's the people that are living in communities. And if you think about it, there has also been a surge, however, of insecurity because of this whole idea of people being bashed around in the digital experience. And so I love it when brands reflect back social change as marketing. Here's an example that I think is amazing.
Hi, Erin. Show me what it looks like to run like a girl.
My hair.
Show me what it looks like to fight like a girl. Now throw like a girl.
Aw.
So do you think you just insulted your sister?
No. I mean, yeah, insulted girls, but not my sister.
My name is Dakota, and I'm 10 years old.
Show me what it looks like to run like a girl.
You get the idea.
Throw like a girl.
Changes in social behavior reflected
fight
back
like
as marketing.
Girl.
It works really well. I'll move on before we burst into tears. But here's what's interesting about this younger generation. Guess what? They want to achieve happiness. They want to be true to themselves. And they want to spend time with their family and friends. And they also want to be financially stable. Now, these values are more closely aligned to their grandparents' generation than their parents' generation. They just have a different way of expressing it. So those of you who represent cities, you could think about this as a reflection of society today. They're way too busy, though. They get a lot of their information from feeds, but they're going to represent a massive spend for you, $2.45 trillion by 2025, and at that point, that represents 75% of the workforce. But the world's completely overwhelming. You guys know that. We're hit with 1,900 media messages per day, and about 1,500 of those are ads. No, 250 of those are ads. And then it becomes underwhelming because you can't find what you're looking for. You know, the world has turned into this space that it's really hard because we have this fear of being offline. And where it becomes interesting for me is that one of the largest contributors of stress today is media overload. So the stuff we're trying to get to promote things is actually killing us. I don't know about you, but about six times a day, my leg will just false vibrate. I suffer from the phantom phone vibration syndrome, which is akin to having a cocaine habit, I'm told. So there's that. But what's interesting is it's about this, attention. So as much as there's this digital experience to try and capture the hearts and minds of consumers, the one thing that we measure and should measure the most is attention. Because it doesn't matter how much of these digital experiences that are actually being built that are coming at us, the one thing that will not change is 24 hours in a day. But how we assign our attention is up to us as people who are representing brands. And in this country particularly, you have over-indexing mobile connections, really big in terms of mobile. People love to have mobility, especially in this country. And if you think about this country as well, particularly early adopters, ranked third in terms of early adoption of technologies. No wonder you've got the second largest startup, you know, number of companies in the startup world, outside the Valley. It's all about mobile. You guys know that. Everybody's talked about it in front of you all time, every time. Here's some evidence. 88% of what people do is app-driven. The rest of it is all about mobile web. And what's fascinating for me, though, is this. Unlike television or newspaper or even online advertising, when it comes to actually engaging people, most people will try a mobile experience once. So you have to actually surprise and delight and do things differently. 80% of them become your power users. Now, why do you care about that? Because with power users on the mobility space, we move away from advertising as we knew it as marketers in the house to this. People who actually want to drive advocacy, word of mouth, peer to peer. Because that's the new, is peer-to-peer. It's not about mass anymore. It's about these peer-to-peer close relationships. So it's about advocacy over awareness. But there is a revolution happening in ads. This is, again, how a lot of people, you probably spend marketing money talking about brands. Back in the day, this is how people used to market. Really simple type of marketing. Part of that was outdoor. Some of that was on television, newspaper, radio, etc. This is what people have to experience brands today. There's lots of different ways for people to touch your brand. And it's just getting more and more and more distracted. So it's all about emotional marketing, though. Some of the videos we've already seen this morning are designed to touch the heart, not the head. 75% of purchase decisions to date are made emotionally. It doesn't matter whether it's a $5 bottle of water or a $75,000 car. It's emotional decisions we make, then we rationally decide whether we want them or not. I'm told creators are no longer in charge, though. It's all about machines. It's all about technology. They're coming in to take over. Well, that's rubbish, isn't it? Because we're in an industry that's human by design. We're trying to target humans, but people want to actually touch all humans on the planet. It's called programmatic advertising, by the way. If you've never heard that term, it's coming at you. And then people want to be deeply intimate with everybody on the planet. Well, that's called native advertising. Now, native is a term that I think is really naive. Back in the day when I was doing this sort of ads, we used to call that shit advertorial, but now we call them native ads. But if you want to think about native ads, if you guys want to think about that from the advertising part of this, is simply this. Put your brand in places where you cannot buy media and buy media elsewhere. This is an example. This is a website in the US. It's called Trulia. This is a website where you can list something like a house for sale. The makers of Barbie, Mattel, listed Barbie's house for sale in Malibu for $25 million. That isn't an example of a native ad. It's just an editorial photo spread. But with that, we're in the world of insights, where if you collect all this data that all of these cities talked about collecting, that will give you an insight. That insight will allow you to test stuff through headlines, because we're headline-driven well when it comes to digital. And on top of that, you end up with appeal. So what is your rank appeal in terms of what you're doing to capture the hearts and minds of consumers? It's about art and science, getting the balance together of culture and code. In fact, I think it's more about the science. It's more about the science and finding the art in it. Because this is what's interesting. It allows you to do things that are authentically, that feels real. Because today, when I go into something like Google and I check out a brand I like Adidas, and I check out some shoes, and then I tab over to Facebook, for example, an ad turns up. It's called behavioral retargeting. That's what happens in the digital landscape. But if I was to pick up my cell phone and head to lunch, the path to purchase today is destroyed until a real-world example of this could happen. I could get a direct response from a brand saying, hey man, here are those shoes. These are turn-by-turn directions to get you to a store, and this is a discount coupon to egg you on. That's the sort of innovation that could happen in a society that embraces technology and people together as a combination. But here's what's interesting. Marketing always follows audiences' behavior. Audiences outpace marketers. That's why brands are acting like humans today. And that's where the authenticity has to come into it. So context matters. Put your brand, build good content, put it in smart places. Easy to say, really hard to do. Because this is the most overused word in our industry. Storytelling. Everyone has stories. They just have to stop telling. It's more about the story, no doubt. But this is what's interesting. It's still about the creative idea. 88% of creatives believe that the best days are yet to come versus those of the creative community say that technology helps give them control. That's what 75% says. And what's interesting to me is that you're in a world now where you have bigger, more open, more nuanced environments where you can actually embrace people differently. So it's not about closing things down from a marketer perspective. It's about embracing all of this interesting fragmentation that I've heard about this morning. But in this world where you can launch everything, you have direct intimacy with consumers. And that's exactly what we're trying to do when we're trying to get the urbanization of people inside environments. So how do you do that? You have to be reactive. Yep. Immediacy. You have to be relevant. So context. You have to be remarkable, meaning stand out, surprise, but you've got to be real. And real is what people want. That's why we actually live in communities. So if you think about it, human wants connection. And then immediately people think about the Internet of Things for that. They think about hard physical technology. And an example of that is, for me, is it's no longer just about Internet of Things. It's the Internet of Everything. And there are smart art objects we're wearing on our bodies and on our persons. And these are the things that are drawing us closer to each other because we're using technology to do that. It's a $19 trillion business by 2020, and so that's a big example of why a lot of technology that you'll see is all going to be about the smart or the Internet of Everything. If you think about it, it could be everything like this. This is a beautiful product called Hello. You clip it to your pillow, and it will tell you that you woke up at 2:30 in the morning, but it won't just tell you you woke up. That's great. It'll tell you you woke up because a dog was barking or a car alarm went off. It'll tell you about the context of your environment. So digital or technical products, it's giving you physical experiences. Here's another example. This is called Quitbit. So if you're trying to give up smoking, this is in the fitness category. You can actually now have a smart cigarette lighter that will still light your cigarettes, but it'll tell you the number of cigarettes you're smoking per day versus your quota. And you've also got this for smart parenting. This is called Pacify. This thing will tell you how many times your child is sucking on a pacifier and tell you when your kids start teething. I would have thought the screaming was enough to tell you the kids are teething, but seemingly we now have got technology for that. This thing in your pocket is the most disgusting thing on the planet. Data point one. When I think this thing is dirty, what do? I just wipe it on the back of my ass. So there's a company called Corningware that own a company called Gorilla Glass that powers a lot of the glass on our phones. And while they're building technology that makes screens hard to break, they've got nanotechnology now that's going in and eating off the grubbiness of our phones to make this a clean device. Pretty amazing. This is the controller of your life. This is no longer a smartphone. This is the connection to humans in my mind. And it's interesting. We're moving away from speaking to people on this thing for this to be a controller, even to this extreme.
Some
check this out.
Some smartphone cases just protect your phone. Others try to extend your battery life. A few have even tried to protect you, the user. But how great would it be if there was a case so intuitive, so powerful, that it could do all three? Introducing Yellow Jacket, the world's first stun gun smartphone case.
Now, if you missed that, this is the world's first stun gun phone case. So we've now got things where people are wrapping around this thing to even protect us. So this, again, is the control of your life. This becomes the unit that makes it even more human, even things like stun gun controllers. Pretty crazy. All right, let's move on. Wearables. Who has one on? Who's a wearable? Great. What do you got on there, bro? Just one? I see a bunch of stripes. It's your shirt. I get it. Cool. Who's got one and doesn't have it on? No, nobody. A couple of us. Here's what's interesting from my perspective. Data point one is that I have a ton of them, by the way. When I wear all my wearables, I look like a tribal leader. But what's really interesting about this is that about 6 months is when you're going, oh, I'm not going to wear that anymore because nobody gives a shit if you walk 19,000 steps. But what's interesting is if we collect that data and other people could use it, like my yoga instructor or my fitness trainer, then that becomes useful data. So when we move from self-quant to multi-quant, that becomes really interesting for that data. But what's amazing for me is there's 290 different wearables in the category of fitness, and they're all over our bodies. We've got them on our heads, we've got them on our shoulders, everywhere. We've even got them on our dogs and cats. So it's really interesting to think about the wearable, because how does that build a human connection? It could, but at the moment it feels like everything's limited to wearing them on your wrist or having them on your face. But it's not true, because we've got things like this that are coming at us.
Have you ever noticed that the world's most powerful men don't carry a wallet? In fact, have you ever seen them pay for anything? Well, now you can join them. Introducing the MJ Bail Power Suit. In collaboration with Heritage Bank and Visa PayWave, we've developed the technology to embed a contactless payment chip and antenna into the sleeve of a suit. So now you can pay invisibly wherever you go.
How about them apples? You want to live in a society where that happens? Woohoo! But what's happening is everything's becoming fully immersive, and we're measuring everything now. And it's fascinating, because what we're trying to do is drive emotion through this connection. But if you are going to drive emotion through connection, you need to drive meaning. So it's not enough to be immersive. You have to drive meaning behind it. And here's some examples of stuff from my perspective that means a brand needs to be an experience. Now let me just show you a couple. Nothing like a fart joke before the break. But here's what's also interesting. So be different is that. If there was a tagline for that, it's clearly be different. Think about the environment. You have to be inspired by the environment you already buy in today. Now, this is typical outdoor advertising. But look how beautiful this is by Apple. These are all images just shot on an iPhone 6. So if their value proposition is that I can take these beautiful images that can be blown up to billboard, these guys have decided to actually reflect that back in their marketing. You also have to think about product that could be reinvented differently. So hopefully this inspires you. Here's an example of Coca-Cola. So they realized that in Vietnam, all of their products were still ending up in landfill. So they decided to change each bottle top to be different. Bubble blower, pencil sharpener, you know, water pistol. So these now become different purposes. And so these are examples of how physical products could become marketing for you. Here's another example. the maker community, of which we're going to hear lots and lots about, and it also leans into the element of hacking community. And if you can think about hacking your brand every day, maybe you can end up with an experience something like this.
In many countries, DHL has more locations, more vehicles, and more employees. That's why DHL is faster. However, to communicate this with a classic advertising campaign is expensive. So why couldn't the competitors advertise for DHL? For that purpose, giant packages were taped all over with thermoactive foil and cooled down below the freezing point. In this way, the competitors picked up a black package that transformed back at temperatures above freezing and delivered the message in the most beautiful colors. To addresses
cool
in the
to
city...
Think about brand hacks, huh? Right. But here's what I can tell you, man. Sure as anything else, is there's more connectivity, there's going to be more screens, there's going to be more customers, and there's going to be more data. And so if you think about it, what are you going to do with that? Well, one thing that I do know is that video will continue to be everywhere. So one thing around all that is the beautiful art of story through video. 90% of people are really freaky for it. So as an ambassador of cities, this is what's really interesting from my perspective, is that people love to engage in video. We just love to absorb it. We're a show-me culture, as you guys know. But it's all about sight, sound, and motion to create emotion, to drive people to do things differently. That's really what we're trying to do. And who would have thought you could tell a brand story in 6 seconds? Somebody stood up here 3 years ago and said that? No way. You wouldn't believe them. But today, you're no longer locked for 30s and 60s. It's no longer just about a television-driven world. It's all about a different way to get in front of people when you're trying to be a brand ambassador. So whether it's 6 seconds or as long as you like, it's up to you. But here's an example of 6 seconds I think is quite cool. Pretty amazing. Let's watch it twice. Why not? So fun. Brilliant. But here's what's also interesting. Again, back to stories. It's less about telling, it's more about story. And as a brand, if you find it hard to do that, think about the context. Because here's a beautiful example.
Don't thank me. Thank the savings.
You can't skip this Geico ad because it's already over. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Get the idea? Here's the thing. This is a 6 second video and they just kept the camera rolling. And what's amazing about it is that if this thing went on for 20 minutes, we'd probably sit here and watch it for 20 minutes. But let me just say this. Let me finish with this. I'm an artist. Red, blue, yellow are the three primary colors that make up every painting in the universe. When it comes to touching people, when it comes to digital, it's about the right content, the right technology, and the right distribution. They're the three primary colors for you. And lastly, these tips. Don't just remix the culture, reframe it, reinvent stuff. Find the right people because the power of the influence is very important. Generate user-generated communities, not just user-generated content. Let the consumer own your brand. Make sure your physical and digital experience feel authentic and real. Don't just build stuff digitally and think that's really what happens physically. They have to combine together well and fail forward. Because without failing forward and celebrating that, you won't get to reach success sooner. And bottom line is, if you obey all the rules, you miss all the fun. Thanks very much for hanging out. Cheers.
Wow. It's like every word you've ever heard.
Emptied of every meaning you've ever felt. Oh, my gosh.
A tour de force, a real tour de force. Did you know that it's all about mobile?
Yeah,
and that's what it is about, Nicholas.
I didn't even know there was such thing as human relations until Shingy just laid that upon us.
It,
the fabric of our lives.
It's cool that DHL ad he liked was cool.
Yeah. I mean, we unfortunately didn't get to meet Shingy, but he did send a press packet, which I think he sends even to restaurants before he arrives.
Yeah.
That's just how you get ahead in this world these days.
Yeah.
And he has an amazing fashion sensibility.
It's true.
Yeah.
The hair,
the graffitied suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The skinny jeans.
Yeah. Clearly passionate about graffiti.
Loves graffiti.
Yeah. Is he trying to... Yeah. Is graffiti a technology for him?
It's a form of storytelling.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's a narrative in every can, folks.
Oh my God. It's like a phone, but it's like a spray can that's a taser. Check that out. You can have a taser on your phone.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, when you... when
Nicholas. Were you paying attention? I said, you could have a taser in your phone case.
Yeah, I can't wait. Oh, gosh. I mean...
you can be armed. It's your phone.
Yeah. And then it'd be great. It'd be great to be able to share those tases. I don't know what the
right.
what the present tense verb of tasing is, but to
tase.
Yeah, to tase. yeah. Could tase some geese.
And then here's the thing. It's like I could see on my app that you had tased a goose. And I could like that tase.
Or dislike
similar to like
it,
liking a transaction from your banking app.
Could you comment on the tase?
One would imagine.
Yeah.
Right? Be like, good tase, bro.
Or like, you know, I think you could have hit him in a more sensitive area. You could have transferred more electricity.
Is this on the blockchain?
The tasing app?
Yeah. Yeah. Is this employing the blockchain? Does it use the blockchain?
It's crypto.
It's yeah, it, that's right. It's all about that.
It's crypto, but also crypto is it.
Sick.
It kind of reminds me of did you ever see the there's a Steven Soderbergh movie, Megalopolis?
No. Schizopolis.
Schizopolis, sorry, Megalopolis.
Still haven't seen it.
I wouldn't call it a great film, but it's you know, funny because his oeuvre is so strange, you know, all over the place.
I kind of admire that about Soderbergh in general, where you're just like guess what's a Steven Soderbergh movie?
Yeah, you really can't, you know.
It's impossible. It's like the last thing I saw by him was his Victorian medical drama, The Nick.
Okay, with the great soundtrack.
With amazing synthesizer soundtrack by Cliff Martinez, yeah.
Yeah, because I think, you know, you see Schizopolis, and one of the characters, I don't even have the words to describe how he speaks, but he speaks like almost... Well, so for example, he'd come home from work, and he would just announce generic greeting to his wife.
Like that's what he'd say, right?
Yeah, and she would say, hey, how are you? He'd say, generic greeting. You know, he just speaks in this way. He said, expressions of hunger, you know, instead of actually saying I'm hungry. It felt a bit like this logic had penetrated our friend Xing Yi here.
Yeah, except he doesn't seem to have any desires or interests really, other than graffiti maybe.
Yeah, being well known.
The world as it is.
Being famous, which I guess is kind of like one of the last lucrative jobs that will exist. For anyone who's not already rich, you can just become famous by being famous.
Huh. Well, one of these days, 10 years of the talking show will be rediscovered.
The box set.
Ken Burns, his new documentary on the talking show.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10 hours long, and it's just us the whole time.
And it.
It. Oh, man. It.
Not the clown, who's also it.
Isn't the clown in It called Pennywise?
Yeah, you're right. What is it referred to in the movie?
I think it's the same as It.
Oh, right. Just the kid's afraid of It, and It is the clown.
but It isn't the necessarily. Pardon me. it was stuck in my throat. no, the clown isn't It. Qua It. It is like what it's about.
Oh. Man. You remember when they made a new It movie a couple years ago, and they built that really intricate looking haunted house in Hollywood, like kind of near the ArcLight
to promote the film.
Yeah, to promote the film.
Yeah,
those guys probably got hit pretty hard by the pandemic. That business. I wonder if they're getting the proper bailout money.
The placemaker business or whatever?
Yeah, the like, you know, we'll build you a custom experience for your Hollywood movie release.
Right, like this is like Meow Wolf or like the Museum of Ice Cream or whatever, like right, like that kind of right. business. Like
it's like Lehman Brothers and the Museum of Ice Cream got all the bailout money.
I do think that's kind of what those guys do between gigs is they make like a thing like the Museum of Ice Cream or like,
yeah,
you know, and then people can go in there and take Instagram, gram themselves there and be like, look, we're having an experience.
You mean they can tase people in there?
The poverty of the world on offer is so galling that like it's remarkable that it works at all.
Yeah,
you know, it's just truly shocking. My friend Sean wrote an article about DIY spaces in Denver, I think.
Okay.
You know, because at the beginning of the 21st century, it wasn't that big a town culturally, right? Like it didn't have all the infrastructure that you would have elsewhere, but like, you know, it would have like some DIY spaces and there were places where like noise bands would come through and play and, you know, like
lots of loose weed money.
You know, but weed hadn't necessarily even been legalized in the early 2000s, right? Wasn't it like...
I think Colorado was the first.
Yeah, for sure. But it like that wasn't like the year 2000. That was like...
No.
2008 right, or something. 2005. Sure. Yeah. And, you know, so there would be like these like warehouses and they'd do art stuff. And then there was like this compound opening up there now. Like then tech got into Denver and, you know, the warehouses, you can't have those anymore. And the ghost ship thing happened and landlords were like, I'm not renting you Yahoo's a warehouse to do bullshit in anymore.
Right. When these guys are going to grow weed for billions of dollars a year now.
Right. And then, or these guys have a tech startup that interacts with the weed space.
Right.
And they want open planned offices in this environment with beanbag chairs and stairs that are also seating.
And they pay us ahead of time in crypto it.
Yeah. Itcoin. And and so like, you know, obviously, you know, your little DIY venue has to go. And then like this company called Meow Wolf is like building a facility. They've just like finished their Vegas facility and now they're focusing on building like an entire sort of like experience adult playground in Denver next. And reading the article made me feel like the most intense dysphoria operating in culture. I was just like, God, really? Must I? You know, like is this like what they will suggest I do with my time? When I'm like you know, like what's there to do in town? They're like, you can go to the Meow Wolf building and like take a selfie with their like goofy grocery store that they've made that's like a alien, it's for aliens, it's like a grocery store for aliens.
Yeah, stories like this, like when you have any kind of encounter with culture at large in the US where you're like, all right, Steve, let's get our vaccines and go see a naive painting show. That sounds like a blast.
Yeah, right? Totally. Totally.
Yeah, sign me up. I want to see some naive figure paintings today.
I want to see some shitty paintings. I want to go to, I've said this before, I think, but I definitely still want to go to Zebulon and see with 12 other people, pay $8, $8 to $10 for a glass of medium rosé.
Yeah.
And watch some guy kind of play guitar.
Yeah, like with his shins.
I want to see that.
Yep.
I want to see... he's been doing it for 40 years. It's his whole life.
Yep.
I want to see that. I want to see, crappy figurative painting. Actually, you know what? If anyone out there in Radioland does want to see some nice quasi-figurative paintings, I did see a good show.
Oh, yeah?
Kate Mosher Hall...
Ooh.
Has a show at Hannah Hoffman, which is now located in MacArthur Park, right around the corner from where I'm recording this right
Hot
now.
Damn.
And And they're wonderful paintings, and they're all sort of dedicated to her dead dog, who died this year, who was a really nice dog.
Oh.
I'm not even a fan of dogs, so... but there's that special sort of like dogs and lesbians bond that is like
wasn't
a sacred...
A bond I'm familiar with, but...
It's a sacred place. And, you know...
A window into another world.
It's a beautiful painting show. It's really cool. And... It includes lots of the same sort of virtuosic, sort of mangled screen printing that she uses elsewhere or before. But it's great. And, you know, she's an awesome person. So
wonderful. I'm going down to O Townhouse on Saturday anyway.
So oh, yeah. I'll spin by. Oh, and, you know, is there an opening there or is it?
No, I had to make an appointment.
Right. Also, not so far from there. K-Chung radio host Mark McKnight has his new show of extremely gay photographs.
I did see those online.
Paul Soto.
Yeah, there's
docking in that show, which I think is like, that's rare. I have not seen, you know, people. All right.
I've never seen docking in such sharp light, I'll be honest.
I've never seen docking in such detail. It's true. Yeah. And at the same time, and the prints look beautiful. And also, actually, it's Johnny Jungle Guts, his husband.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So, there's multiple K-Chung
as one of the models.
Soto. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I can't tell whether he is docking or
being docked.
Yeah. I'm not sure which of the two he is, but one of them is him.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, lovely show. K-Chung radio plugs all around. If you're still listening to this, go see some real high culture. Listen to some classical music.
Yep.
Get together with your friends and form a Baroque music consort.
Play the flute.
And works for me.
Yeah.
Or follow a European sport that's not that popular here.
But very popular elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like in Europe or something, let's say. Yeah.
Just don't do what you're supposed to is the theme of the talking show tonight.
Because what it's about is disruption.
Yeah.
Right? That's what it's all about. People want authenticity, and that desire is creating a rupture.
Mm-hmm. By doing something undisruptive that makes money.
That's what it is about.
The Stephen
King film?
It's
not
about
clowns.
Oh, right. Okay. All right. Stay cool. Stay Pennywise. This is The Talking Show. Good morning, Chinatown.
Ciao.